Yeah, get that hawacha in the bedroom. See what that can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you get that, what is that stupid, like, Mary Kay sex toys company? Pure Romance. Get Pure Romance's hawacha. Oh.
Sure.
Launch God. That and launch. Let's fire that up in the bedroom next time things get hot and steamy.
Terrifying. Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And this week we're talking about The Ones Who Live, episode 3. It's called Bye. Aaron, are you ready to say bye, Michonne, bye, Rick? Or are you bought into this episode? How you feeling?
I'm not ready to say bye, Felicia, to either of them. I will say this is a very whelming episode of The Walking Dead. Like, this episode fell... Okay. Kind of like I'm, you know, shifting in my seat, tapping my fingers until you get to the Gonzo ending. And I'm like, I can't fucking wait to see how, like, I mean, I know they're doing like Napa to Earth, but they're still like 50 to 100 feet off the ground traveling at probably 90, 80, easily. 100, you know, 100 miles an hour. Like, I'm really, really looking forward to... What are the odds of them falling into a water, body of water, or okay. them just like scuffed and scraped up and they just don't even address it? They're just like, you know, we open up the episode of them just kind of dusting off their shoulders and Rick, like, what are you doing, Michonne? And him being
I think Gimple's going to start the next episode 15 seconds earlier. And it's going to be them falling out of the chopper. And then they're going to cut to now. And they're just going to be like, dusting themselves off. Yeah. We won't actually see how they land.
Yeah, those vital 15 seconds will just be question mark, question mark, question mark.
Yep. Again. Yeah, that's bonkers, man. That, I don't know. Whatever with this show.
I mean, I get it. Like, I understand why. Like, it plays like a desperation gambit where you're just putting faith in, you know, you think you've already lost something, and you're putting your faith in the against all odds, believe a little longer. It kind of works thematically. I just hope that they do enough where I believe that they're going to survive this fall out of this fucking helicopter. That's all.
Oh, they
won't. That's all.
They definitely won't. No, there's not a chance, man. I watched the behind the scenes thing at the end of this, and I loved Andrew Lincoln's reaction to the whole thing. He's just like, yeah, this is the craziest, most ridiculous ending we've ever done to an episode. It's his favorite because of how ridiculous it is. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, he's appropriately calibrated on this show. Yeah. I still feel like week to week I'm getting appropriately calibrated because I want the show to be better. I always want every show to be better or as good as it can be. And they do stuff like this and I'm like, I guess I just have to let it all go. I have to let it all go. Who cares if the show is good? It's now just time to watch the stupidity unfold.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when I say whelming, that's actually a pretty damning indictment because, like, I would much rather this be, like, full-blown trash monster Jadis terrible or,
sure,
you know, somewhere in the season 10 highs of the reclaimed glory of The Walking Dead. But this is very, it's just, it felt boring. Like, I don't know if this is the one kind of filler episode that you get from, like, shuffling up a couple scripts of movies into the episodes, but, like, you know, I just felt like we got almost no new information, and they could have given us new information because, what is her, Thorn, almost called her Locke. Thorn got a bunch of new information, but they're playing, and, like, this whole thing where, like, I think they're really riding on the ragged edge of believability of Thorn, like, covering for Rick and Michonne, but not really knowing what's up with Rick and Michonne. And, you know, she's really smart and perceptive, but she still hasn't, I don't think, picked up. Or maybe she's finally picked up at the end that they're an item, you know, when she saw them snogging. Maybe. Did she see them snogging?
I don't think so.
I didn't either. But, like, there's a lot of just messy shit that it's like...
Welcome to The Walking Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A weird framing. Yeah.
But I don't know. I needed an incendiary zombie head. I needed, another sex toy appendage. I needed something to pin the what the fuck meter and Michonne hurl. I guess that's it. Yeah, Michonne. It just came at the very end of the episode where it's like, oh, my God, the show got a pulse and it's over.
Yeah. Get that Huacha in the bedroom. See what that can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you get that... what is that stupid, like, Mary Kay sex toys company? Pure Romance. Get Pure Romance's Huacha.
Sure.
Launch that up and launch. Let's fire that up in the bedroom next time things get hot and steamy.
Terrifying.
It will definitely inject some excitement into your bedroom for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this episode. I think there's like somewhere in there, there's some interesting story that they're trying to tell here. I sort of like the dilemma they put Rick into here, where mm-hmm. Jadis has this dead man switch, somebody who actually understands the meaning of dead man mm-hmm. switch, unlike a mama from Dread.
Wow, taking Dread shots. Okay.
Yeah. We just covered that not too long ago. But yeah, I sort of like this dilemma because he can't leave now, but Michonne won't leave without him. And she doesn't understand, I think, exactly the strength of the CRM yet. Even though she's seen their massive field of choppers and trucks and bombs and shit, she's still... I can't tell if she understands it and just doesn't regard it as highly as Rick does because she hasn't seen the structure around it, the organizational structure, or if she just thinks, yeah, we can beat him. We can beat him.
I think Rick the latter. She has had her faith rewarded against all odds again and again and again. And
well,
she...
that's just stupid. She's seen their choppers and tanks and bombs and guns and shit, right?
Yeah, it's like the positive form of the gambler's fallacy. And, you know, like the other thing is like they've taken down these type of things before that look too big to fail, right? I guess sure. They haven't. Actually, Michonne ducked out before they actually met the Commonwealth, so she doesn't even have that kind of high-level experience. But I think it's a tale of a person who's had their faith rewarded again and again and again, and they're just puffed full of it, and they're in disbelief that their husband is acting this way. And yeah, I really think that she, you know, Rick's been here. He's a high-ranking soldier. That's more than they usually get when they're in these kind of predicaments. And, you know, like there's this fierce grin she had when she's surrendering. It seems to me like she's got delusional face. Like, well, when Rick's got her held at gunpoint and being like, you know, you got to do all this stuff, just trust me. And she's got that fierce grin. She had that fierce grin and she's pushing the RDIM, whatever the hell that fucking thing is. I think she's just got, yeah. And at the end, the thing that bothers me a little bit is they're definitely going for broke selling the romance of Rick and Michonne, but they're doing that at expense of the real motherhood of Michonne. You know, this isn't just a Romeo and Juliet. She's trying to find her man and get back with him in the apocalypse. This is she's also got two young children that depend on her and need her. And it's like every time she doubles down on something that seems to take her far further away from that, I kind of wince a little bit because it's just like, you know, And I think the show also is like has never actually come out and said, you know, like have her no one's ever challenged her on, you know, putting I guess Nat did last episode where he's like, you know, you got your kids to think about. But very rarely does the show actually put this decision up to the harsh light of judgment. It's like, you know, it is kind of wild. And it's only for like it doesn't really make sense except for contractual reasons, like just deny Guerrera wanted out. But like there's no don't buy that Michonne would make these decisions. Now, clearly she's making these decisions, so I need to kind of recalibrate. But it still kind of bugs me. And also like there's a little bit of kind of delicious tension between her and Rick because she's doing the things that Michonne or Rick would do in the position they're put in. And Rick is just beat down and knows the quote unquote impossibility of it. So it's like he's exasperated by her just pissing on all these chances he has of like, hey, what we have is broken, but what you have with Judith and RJ and all that stuff is not. Please, please take this escape route. Mm-hmm. And she, but like, he also, I think there, and Andrew Lincoln's good at portraying this, is like he understands that he's asking the impossible. He wouldn't, like, in their positions reversed. Sure. No fucking way. And he finds that she's a sergeant major of some military organization with helicopters and shit. And hey, we just can't leave, Rick. You gotta go back to the kids and just leave me here. Just give up on me. There's no way he would do that. So it's like kind of funny to see his frustration, but also the realization that it is what it is. But yeah, what they're doing with,
she wrestles with that a little bit in her journals or her radio.
Does she still
messages?
Have her journals?
I don't know what she's,
because like I thought they confiscated the, like Rick confiscated her book. Maybe he gave it back to her. Is that the one thing he gave back to her last episode, or did he slip it to her with the katana? Maybe
I can't remember. But yeah, she's clearly like grappling with those issues in her own head. So I guess like that they're doing enough on that front for me to be like, okay, she understands what she's giving up here by pursuing Rick. And it's a choice she's making, and whether we agree with it or not, that is a choice that Michonne made.
And then there is, of course, the Jada of it all. Jadis, rather.
Oh, God.
Man, the way they are playing this character, I hate it.
tension.
Oh, my
her
God.
And Rick.
And you can tell that Gimp, like, just speaking of the after credits material, Gimple talking about, and I do think Rick and Jadis have a bit of chemistry, but like it's not enough to whole, but put a whole, you know, miniseries around. I don't think, especially when you've got, you know, like, and it's funny how, I don't know. I'm trying to think, because she comes off like in like a high school comedy. There's always like the hot cheerleader girl that the quarterback is dating. And then there's always this kind of like, you know, snobby, shitty girl who's trying to like ingratiate herself. And the captain of football team's like, I don't even like her. And all like it feels like that. Like she's just this desperate, delusional, desperate sexual energy that she's putting out.
Look, man, with the CRM's help, anything is they already broke Rick. She's just thinking, yeah, the CRM will help me get with Rick. Like it took 6 years or however long to break him, to make him stay here and think he can't escape. It might take another 32 years to make him think, oh, actually Jadis is a pretty good sexual partner, but she can make that happen. Just give it time.
Time's on her side.
Yeah.
I did love in universe the haircut call out. That was pretty delicious. Best
the
part of the
shitty
episode.
Haircut.
It was. The reason it's whelming instead of underwhelming is because I stood up, fist pumped, and cheered when Rick said that you're a hero with a shitty haircut.
Yeah, I don't know if, what, 8 years at this point of looking at Jadis's bad hair is worth that payoff. Mm-hmm. But sure. Yeah, it was a moment.
Yeah.
Don't shamble away. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Hungry Ones will feast. We're back with The Watching Dead.
Well, speaking of a moment, is now our moment to get into the episode?
I think so.
All right. We start with an ominous title cards in the Gimple era a few years ago. Yeah. As Jadis, with better hair, waste food, and gloats over essentially owning Rick for saving his life.
This is the thing that kills me, man. Somewhere along the line, she said, this is my haircut. She picked this haircut. This isn't like, there's no chance. I've seen the other people in the CRM. They have some normal hair.
Thorn,
and this
doesn't
isn't her
have...
military cut. She just decided this is my look.
Yeah, no, Thorn has just a regular ponytail, you know? Yeah. They're not, this you know, the Jadis goes into barbershop, says, give me the circumcised penis, please. That's what I want. And she walks out with it. It's insane. It's a choice because she has regular old mom hair. That's what she does. She looks like a mom. She looks like a mom dropping her kid off the daycare. Yeah. Sided on the way
perfectly
home.
Perfectly reasonable.
There's the fry stand. I can deserve to treat myself to 500 fries. I'm gonna have a fry. I'm gonna have one of those 500. Throw the rest away.
And hopefully there'll be a mistaken onion ring in there somewhere too.
Yeah, because that's when she's not wrong. Like, I have rediscovered onion rings in the past few months. They're just better. They're worth the $2 upcharge.
Okay, the best onion ring is better than the worst fry, for sure. Like, without a doubt. But the best fry is way better than the best onion ring.
Ooh, hard disagree on that. I thought you were going to say, like, the average fry beats the average. Because you can get some god-awful onion rings. Like, those ones that are, like, rings, the oil's not hot enough, or it's too old, or there's the breading's all fucked up. It can definitely be bad.
Yeah, but... or you bite into it and the whole onion just slides right out, and now you just have a... tube of breading,
undercooked onion. But on the whole, I think, especially if I can control the quality of them, which I can at home, onion rings are the way to go.
I have huge confusion, confusion about A's and B's now. I am more confused about A's and B's than I have ever been in the entire run of this show.
All right,
can you explain to me any of what Jada says here and how any of it can be true? Because she's talking like she was able to save his life by claiming that he was a B, right? That's what happened.
Right.
She saw him. She was like, this guy's an A. We got to kill him. We got to bring in the CRM, destroy him. And then over the course, I don't know, I guess she liked the way his ass looked in his jeans or something and says, nope, he's a B, in order to save his life. But then in this scene, she's saying that, like, the CRM let Jadis into the city because she delivered Rick to them.
So that's, dude,
That doesn't make any sense.
I said last episode that Jadis as a character makes no fucking sense. There is a way to look at her from one side of the telescope and it looks kind of deep and on the other, but if you there, it's inconsistent. It's inconsistent. I think this is their attempt to retcon that.
Okay.
But this doesn't make any sense that the CRM finds this insane band of trash people. And instead of declaring them all A's and wiping them out, says, you know what? We want you to be our advanced scouts. When you find someone that needs saving, you let us know and we'll add them to our citizenry. You find a threat, you let us know and we'll probably experiment them and on them with walkers and shit.
Yeah.
But the CRM is also obsessed with secrecy. And can you imagine Major General Beal or Major Okafor going and treating with Jadis and her doing his broken English trash Cro-Magnon bullshit? And they'd be like, you know what? We're going to trust the safety and security of our folks with this. No, it's still like. But
this is not Omaha. This is not Portland. This is trash people.
It makes more sense than I think was the official timeline before, which is she did work for the CRM. She somehow got out and decided to do her own thing. Now that I think they're retconning where she's always a garbage person in more ways than one. She's always a garbage person. And then she made contact to CRM. They gave her that radio and this protocol. But like, and the other thing is, like, why are they playing her so smug? Like, why doesn't, like, she knows Rick. She's lived with him for years. Why wouldn't she take an attack that's more suitable? Like, if she's like, you know, Rick, like, if she's like genuine contrite, it's like, you know, Rick, I pulled some strings so that I'd be the first face you saw. Like, I explain, I had made a snap choice that, like, you could either die in the river or I could take you and cover for you. Like, why is she playing this with so much weird sexual energy and so smug?
Because she's a weirdo. I mean, she's always been a weirdo.
But that's not the energy she had when she called Rick in, you know? Like, I did think that there was some part of her that was doing him a solid. I don't know. Yeah, just, it's a terrible character.
none of it makes sense at this point.
I also was offended that she went to the 500 fries, got a huge thing of fries, had like two fries, and then threw like 50 feet away from the fry bat, just threw the whole thing in there. Like, is that conspicuous consumption?
In the apocalypse? Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, you eat every damn fry in your plate.
Yeah, but isn't there any kind of vetting process? Like, you bring an A, you bring a B in that's secretly an A, and everyone kind of knows it from Okafor down to the up the beetle, and you're still just like, hey, yeah, you get day one through to gate citizen rights.
This is why I've been thinking, okay, there must be some larger plan here, a conspiracy among the ranks of the CRM to entrap Rick, maybe find out where he actually comes from, and so they can go and take them out, because none of this has quite felt right. Beale continues to promote this guy, continues to let this guy get closer to his inner circle, even though he has a bad feeling about him. I don't know. That feels like a mistake. Like, what's there's no upside to it. If he guesses wrong, there's no upside to it. He could just kill Rick, be done with it, and have his extremely strong military that he already has. He doesn't need Rick to lead them to the promised land. He's doing that.
Okafor's whole hypothesis is if we only take in B's and no A's, we won't have enough A's to kick all the B's we need to get to where that makes sense. Like, it's
sure.
I don't know. Honestly, it's a bunch of social Darwinism bullshit that I don't truck with. Like, oh my God, there's weak people and there's strong people, and you can't do nothing with the weak people except for, it's like, I don't know about all that. Like,
sure.
You know,
training
most of Rick's,
circumstance can
like,
make a lot
was
of people
Carol
strong.
Like a super strong person before the zombie apocalypse? Was Daryl, like, he was self, but like, you know, he was a shell of himself.
Was Gabriel
letter? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't, like, this whole fucking show's ethos is that, but maybe that's Okafor's point, that, but then why the obsession with trying to get A's? I don't know. It doesn't make any fucking sense. And I still don't, the more I think about it, the more I can't believe they had Jadis play this smug and so, like, villainous, where, you know, it's like, it's this plea about, like, you know, Rick, I believe in this place. They got a 500-year plan. I'm enlisting. They're recreating the world better than it was. It seems like a great way to spend their life. Like, if this isn't a joke to her, why is she playing it like it's a joke?
Sure. I don't know.
I don't know. 500-year plan.
I actually like that they bring this up, because I don't know if you're aware of this. It's something I've been kind of developing on my own, but I have a 500-year plan for Bald Moot to take over podcasting.
Oh, wow. Ambitious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see a problem with your plan. You have no heirs.
Put
a lot of pressure on my son here, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's part of it. I mean, we probably bring.
Does your plan involve cloning tanks?
You know, we're pretty close. We're pretty close to artificial intelligence and cybernetics and upload of consciousness. I think I can make it. If I make it another 40 years of podcasting, I pretty much sealed the deal on the 500-year plan.
You know what?
In fact, I've been thinking about extending it to a 550,000-year plan.
Now you're going to L. Ron Hubbard, Bill. I think at very least Bald Move can afford to freeze your head when you die. That's like the least we can
do,
right? What's that like?
Yeah.
What, $50,000 to have that done? Have Alcor
just the head?
And,
sure, that's
cheap. Yeah, just the head? Super cheap.
Getting cheaper every day, too.
The other interesting thing that we found out in this scene is that apparently the CRM, the M part of the CRM, cannot enter the city. Do you believe that?
At all. It was kind of, I mean, they made a big deal about the separation between the CRM and the CR first episode, but yeah, here it's becoming more clear.
And we saw that, like, that was one of the downfalls of the Commonwealth, is like, it was a police state. Like, the police were celebrities and, you know, on all the recruiting posters and all that kind of stuff. But it seems like they're trying to do this real strict civilian military leadership kind of divide. But also Jadis in full uniform breaks into Rick's apart, and the soldiers, their quarters are inside the city, like, saying that, relax, they can't be in here. They could be in here. They could just be plain clothes, right?
I don't know. I can't tell what is inside the city and what is across the river.
Or is that a soldier's life? It's like ancient Rome where you couldn't bring your you couldn't bring your armies across the Rubicon. That's like, that was illegal. They had to camp outside the city. You had to lay down your arms to go inside. Maybe it's something like that, but as much time as they had in this episode, I feel like they could have really fleshed this stuff out a lot more. And that's one of my impatience with it, because I hear a 500-year plan. I hear the echelon stuff. I hear all that. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I want to know more about this. We're at the halfway point. Let me know what the stakes are.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we actually learn any of that stuff or if we're kind of just kept in the dark the whole time.
All right, hold on to your butts, Jim. We're going to fast forward a few years, just hours ago. Rick begs Thorne, his co-sergeant major buddy, to go to bat for a woman who quote-unquote saved him.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing an okay job making me wonder about Rick. Is Rick like broken to the point where he just wants Michonne to live and then leave by herself? Or is he not quite broken? Have they not broken him? Is this thing he said to Okafor a couple episodes ago just also part of the ruse? And then they did a pretty good job walking that line, especially in these scenes with Thorne, where he's, you know, telling her one thing and then doing another. And I'm not exactly sure what his end game is there early on in this episode. Later we'll get to, you know, the reveal on that stuff, but it was pretty
good. How do you feel about Rick manipulating what seems like a good person to do his, like, with lies and deceit to get them to do the thing that he wants them to do?
It doesn't sound like she's a good person.
Really?
I mean, so I don't know really anything about her other than...
This is a good point.
Other than, I know very little about her. I know more about Okafor, and Okafor did something that I think is probably righteous. You know, he blew up a stadium full of Marines in order to preserve an entire city full of civilians because he did not believe that that was the proper way to go about this. Saved countless lives, preserved this city. It turned out to be the right call.
It did turn out to be the right call. I have a hard time justifying the morality of it. It's like, but I guess it's a zombie apocalypse. You're deep into zombie apocalypse. Anything goes. But like,
people are going
to
die.
In general, I want lower ranking soldiers to obey the chain of command and follow the orders given to them, even though it doesn't make sense to them. Like when we're talking about containing a zombie outbreak, you know, maybe bomb those cities. But yeah, it did work out in this case.
And knowing that, you know, he had seen this in city after city and it was just a firebomb killing all the civilians.
Right.
This was a guaranteed death sentence for hundreds of thousands or millions of people. And he chose a different route. And I think that for me, I judge that as morally righteous. So I know that he didn't agree with the stuff that Beale is saying and the echelon briefing and all that stuff. He was working to subvert it, apparently. But Thorne has judged it to be the path forward. She's not Okafor, right? And so I don't think maybe we don't feel the same about Thorne, but I'm not on Thorne's side here. She's turning out to be an enemy.
Okay. I'm not sure what your why do you think she's a bad... I guess I would have to know more about the echelon and, you know, like, but we're to the point where we're going to bomb 5,000 Marines rather than a city. It's like you're already making morally compromised decisions for the greater good. So it's like I'm trying to think, like, what is going to flip my wig about what they did to Portland and what's the other city?
Omaha. Yeah,
Omaha. I'm wondering what's going to flip my lid as far as, like, did they just do it for the resources? Like, hey, we're actually the ones running out of food and spending stuff, and these other communities have stuff, and we're just going to take it from them and kill them all and say it's despair. Like, I'm really curious to see, like, what is the, you know, because I mean, again, zombie apocalypse morality. If you got a three city alliance and two of the cities are sliding into chaos and they're running out of food shortages. Like, I could see someone making the monstrous, clear-eyed decision to cauterize this wound and have one strong city remain rather than have its strength sapped by two cities that are probably going to fail anyway. Really bizarre to me that they bomb, you know, they don't let just nature take its course, you know, like they have to go the active route of bombing and maybe even some infiltration and some like opening up some doors and whatnot, helping the zombies out. Like, that's harder to understand, but yeah, I guess I just thought there's nothing about her to scream that she was evil. And she seems like she's got like a real hope for the future now. But
it's her contrast with Okafor that's making me think she's, because I don't think the CRM is a force for good, but I haven't seen enough to really know.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you can just take it for granted that, although it would be a funny thing if like the CRM actually is a force for good and like Rick and Michonne just destroy it like terrorists, just like, you know, it's a one time where they do their thing. We're like, we're going to do that. And it turns out it's like, oh, man, you actually did strangle mankind's best hope to get out of. Because we see what they're doing in France and that ain't it.
Yeah.
But now we catch up and we're back to Jadis gloating over having Rick's future in her hands while she drinks his bourbon. And Rick says, asking why she's threatening him for the first time, this aggressively threatening him and Michonne and everyone in Alexandria. And she says, well, it's because she's afraid of what Rick and Michonne can do together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the story that they're telling, right? The dynamic duo, unstoppable team, is going to take down everything in their path. Also, I don't know. Now there's competition. She was thinking, I'll just wait Rick out and eventually get in his pants when he's given up all hope for anybody else. But here comes Michonne. So now she's got to kick her plan into high gear.
I felt like this was a tedious scene because like most of the stuff was already covered in the last episode. The only new information really got here is that she has got a poison pill or a dead man switch. Mm-hmm. Where she's stashed in her personal files, identifying materials for Rick and Michonne and everyone back at Alexandria and the entanglement. So if anything happens to her, the first thing the CRM is going to do is investigate and then punish Rick and his people. So she's kind of gotten by the short curlies.
She says, I can't remember if he says this or she says this, but security and secrecy above all.
That's her.
Her transformation into full-fledged Romulan subcommander is complete.
True.
Security and secrecy, vital components.
Yeah. I wonder what is going to happen here, because again, it's clear to me that I think, anyway, maybe it's not clear to me, I think that Thorne doesn't know that Michonne and Rick are married and have a relationship and family and kids. I think if she knew that, you know, because Rick's trying to play, it's for Okafor, it's what Okafor would do. Like, I'm wondering, like, Jadis could just tell Thorne the truth.
Sure.
But then again, like, I don't know how Rick and Michonne flying out of a helicopter changes the board, too, because some of this stuff might be moot points, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
I doubt it. Like, what, the helicopter's just going to be like, ah, fuck, our Sergeant Major just fell out the helicopter. Proceed on course, Lieutenant. I mean, at least circle back and see if you can find them. So, if they are dusting themselves off.
I mean, that's to me, the more exciting part about the ending is not these idiots falling hundreds of feet to their demise and somehow surviving, but the fallout effect, right? Like, what is going to happen with Jadis's plan if Michonne and Rick are just suddenly gone?
What is her plan? To fuck Rick? Like, I don't think, like, Rick
and
Michonne
figure...
Her plan
is to go in and take out Alexandria. Like, tell the CRM about Alexandria. Tell them who Rick was. I feel like it backfires on her because she's like, how long... Beale's like, how long have you known this? And she says, oh, forever. Why didn't you tell us sooner? I thought I could screw him. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, have you seen him? He's a good-looking man. Well, yeah, because like that's the other thing is like let's assume that Michonne. I guess maybe Rick hasn't told her the full truth of what Jadis has over their heads, but like if Michonne gets her way and they get away, then they're putting their community at risk. Yes. And how in the hell could anything that Alexandria do?
it can't.
A bunch of stinky hobos almost wrecked their shit. Like, fully, all three communities, like, just 2.5 seasons ago. These people have, like, attack helicopters, man.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no defense against the CRM. What inevitably is going to happen here, they've set it up all episode, is they're just going to take out the top brass. They're going to take them all out with one strike, and that'll be the end of the CRM. I don't know.
How are they going to make a situation? Like, I guess they've already killed off Okafor, but, like, at the end of this season, are, like, Thorn, Jadis, and Beale going to be laying dead at Rick's feet? Is it going to be, maybe. Oh, they already have this, they're already inventing a situation where the top brass is all going to this Cascadia thing so they can do...
Yeah, exactly.
Was that Tom Cruise movie about bombing Hitler, Operation
Valkyrie? Yeah,
Valkyrie. They're going to do a Project Valkyrie on them. But then, if you're going to do that, why throw them out a helicopter? Like, how do they ever? Are they going to play this off like it was an accident? Like, oh, we just forgot to clip on and
you took
we
a corner
slipped,
too
tripped,
fast.
And fell out the helicopter? Yeah.
Yeah. Old shaky hands on the stick there knocked us right out of the chopper. Jesus.
You know, if Rick was flying this thing, it wouldn't happen. But, you know, we got holes ever since Okafor got one. But,
yeah. Wow. That's the other problem. The two problems is Jadis has this dead man switch and she's willing to use it, it seems. And the other one is Rick, like, he's either going to have to give up Michonne and say, like, she pulled me out of the helicopter to the ground. And, I mean, Michonne's going to pay for that, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's going to have to, like, fight the CRM. Because, like, he's never going to get back in as, like, one of their top dogs, right? It just
doesn't seem like, especially with Beale, everything he says is like, I personally suspect you, Grimes. I think you're pulling shit. Yeah, and as we'll find out, he's got Michonne under magnifying glass, too.
And this is a man that already crashed one of their helicopters. So he's crashed one of their helicopters, and he's fallen out of another. I don't think you let this man into your
Take this
your
man
top
off
ranks.
Of hello duty, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
So consignee Dana, a.k.a. Michonne, shows up to her daily Delta cleaning assignment, and for a B... puts in a real strong A showing.
Mm-hmm. People are taking notice.
And they compare her to, like, you know, you can see how she sticks out like a sore thumb. You've got Cleo, this woman who's like, Jesus Christ, I was eating crickets and sleeping in trees. I'm so glad to be inside here and, you know, can handle herself, but it's nothing versus Michonne, who's like one-handed bow staffing, zombie heads off, and then using that to behead another zombie that's attacked. And, you know, all the while the guards are trying to call the consignees off. It's like, she's not even trying. Not even trying to be a B, you know?
Nope. She's got A written all over.
She radiates shit knowing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I kind of like that phrase. That's pretty good.
Sure. No problems there. I do. Walking Dead does this thing. I don't know if you've noticed it, but they always try and create a little more importance from all of their scenes than they really warrant. And I don't know, maybe this spell of The Walking Dead has worked on a lot of people, or some people anyway, to where every moment can be big. Because this is, the end of this scene is Michonne is given another crazy look, and she's writing in her journal, talking on the radio. I don't know what she's doing. Talking to Shoto. She's like, but Shoto, hey, Shoto, get this. They can't stop us. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all about us. Like, and the music swells and there's this huge thing they're trying to do. And I'm just like, take it easy, guy. This isn't the finale. This isn't the final episode or even the final scene of this episode. It's just the beginning. Let us feel that moment without all the artificial bullshit around it. I don't know. the emotional thing that they're trying to do here, the excitement that they're trying to both build and pay off in this one scene, just would be better served if they were building it for a little longer.
It's starting to feel like the Rick and Michonne get together is a little anticlimactic, right? Like that's
so far, yeah.
You've already shot your This Is Us wad, and we had the big reunion with the music, and we all said it worked. You did it, Walking Dead, and now you're just essentially doing what, these aftershocks? These are like, right? You know, it's like when they hit these triumphant moments and stuff, it's like, and then like, you know, they we'll get to it here in a minute. But they did that. I know you, now that you mention it, they did that. They did it a lot because I think they realized
all
that this
time.
Is a pretty flat, like it's a cliffhanger. It's a cliffhanger with like two factoids that we've known about. And I guess there's some character development because the other thing they're doing with the Shoto Daito stuff is that Michonne's starting to give up in a different way on Rick. Like thinking that he is either too broken or too institutionalized, or it's been too many years, he's forgot what they had, that he is just done.
Yeah.
And, you know, like going back to the sure thing of her children versus this maybe thing with Rick and him and his weird Doc Johnson hand, I don't know.
Yeah.
So Major General Beale then gives a eulogy for Okafor. And then Rick gets to know her.
Can we go back real quick to the previous scene? Because I got some other stuff to talk about.
Where are we on?
All right. Another thing I want to talk about in this scene is the scatter charges. Are these scatter charges what they're claiming that they are? Because what they say about the scatter charges is they use these every so often to disperse walkers that have kind of built up into too big of a group.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I remember just last episode seeing a 5 mile wide horde.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want me to believe that that Michonne can just randomly fire watches at helicopters and happen to stumble upon Rick, then I have to believe the CRM would know about this massive horde that routinely builds up in this valley. Do they just not give a shit because it's not close to the CRM, or are these scatter charges not actually what they're saying they are?
I think the latter. Like I took it for granted these disruption charges are the chlorine gas bombs, and they're probably dropping it on people approaching survivors approaching the city.
Yeah, yeah, that absolutely could be true. It just doesn't add up.
And it also seems like, and maybe we can debate this when we get to that, like maybe that they are using large caches of walkers to kind of like form a protective moat to keep people from leaving, like in a East Germany kind of way.
Okay.
East Berlin, like you know, if you're a consignee and you're like, you know what, all's not right in the city of Oz, and you try to run, you're going to run right into a subway full of stiffs. Got another badass name for walkers.
Yep. Oh, also speaking of badass things, heads are just projectiles now in The Walking Dead. Like
oceans Michonne, are battlefields, heads are projectiles.
Yeah, I mean Michonne grabs one with the kill stick, swings it around, and fires it off at another walker and blows up its head with a head.
And knocks it clean. These are like, you know, we talked about this. These are the softest, most sun-ripened zombie skulls. Like it's like throwing a loaf of bread dough at another loaf of bread dough.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I had
and
a real
dumbass.
Dumbass.
And then dumbass Rick. Oh my God. Rick is killing me. At the end of this scene, he sees Michonne walking by and he's like, he's got his mask on. And you can tell behind the mask, he's kind of like, yep, there goes my girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes his mask off and he's got this big idiot grin on his face and he turns and watches her walk past, big stupid smile on his face. Everybody's seeing this. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And he's trying, like they simultaneously want me to believe that they are keeping this secret on the down low, nothing conspicuous, and then they're doing this shit.
Yeah. No, it's pretty. But I guess it's supposed to be TV. You know, like you're supposed to. They're being careful for TV. But
TV careful, sure.
Yeah, it's just like you know you don't see anybody notice them, so then nobody must notice them. What do you think the Grime 68 is all about? Did you notice this?
Oh yeah. I don't know, man.
I saw some people suggest it was like the kill record. You know, like Rick Grimes set the one day clearing record at 68. That didn't make sense to me because like this, it doesn't seem like that's a very CRM thing to do, to like, you know, laud some individual worker's accomplishments. I saw some suggested that maybe it's like this is like Rick Grimes' unit, you know, like this is Grimes' consignee battalion 68, and he's like responsible for these particular consignees. But I don't know if that makes sense either, because if anything, it seems like Thorne is, but. Or it could just be like, you know, it's pretty faded paint. It could just be fucking 50 years old. It's like there was some kind of Grimes company in 68 and some kind of local basketball legend won the All-State Finals in 60. I don't know. But if you know, TWD at baldmove.com, because I would like to hear some possibilities. All right.
What's the point of developing a specific weapon for killing walkers if it's so bad at killing walkers? Like, they have non-kills constantly.
That's a damn good question, especially since it seems like it is a much bigger mess to animate. Like, I thought the special effects have been pretty good, but there's a couple of digital composites they use on those walkers' face to get stabbed that just don't look good.
Yep.
Don't look good. And I just don't buy it. I don't buy that a zombie can survive getting stuck by one of these things in the face, man.
I mean, they shouldn't.
I wish I could do the job.
Yeah, you would think.
All right, so Major General Beale gives a eulogy for Okafor, the guy who got watched last episode, while Rick gets to know Thorne's relationship with Okafor and her backstory just a bit more.
Oh, God. Thorne is moralizing. Oh, no.
At least he's got a sword instead of a bow staff, so he's already a little bit less non-violent.
Oh, no, I mean Thorne. She was saying, you know, I'm beginning to think maybe I was right the first time about Okafor. I don't know, man.
So everyone, you know, dropped in a little suggestions of what when you swear on the sword. I think this is a literal sword. Mm-hmm. I think this is a literal fucking sword. This isn't like a figurative, like, oh, it's a cross shape. You're just taking a solemn vow. I think he literally pulls this sword out and makes people promise on General Mercer's sword.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. Do you know who General Mercer is?
No.
I heard of him, but I didn't really, because you know, I think he gets name checked in Hamilton. But I'll read directly from Wikipedia, because I think it's maybe thematic. While leading a vanguard, an advance force of 350 soldiers, Mercer's brigade, this is in the Revolutionary War, 1776 stuff. Mercer's brigade encountered two British regiments and a mounted unit. A fight broke out at an orchard grove and Mercer's horse was shot out from under him. Getting to his feet, he was quickly surrounded by British troops who mistook him for George Washington and ordered him to surrender. Outnumbered, he instead drew his saber and began an unequal contest. He's finally beaten to the ground, bayoneted seven times, and left for dead. It later noted that General Washington rallied the troops to him, recovered his wounded body. They took him to a field hospital, but he died of his injuries 9 days later.
Oh.
My thought of this guy is like it's him against the world, you know, and okay. the noble but doomed sacrifice, which I think they're trying to, you know. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, they're trying to. They textually put a clear line. They had... You know, Locke from Lost say there's a. I'm tracing a clear line from that's mm-hmm. general sacrifice to Okafor's sacrifice.
Sure, and it's all in his mind in service of creating a new society. You know, a better society.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be the judges of that, I guess, later.
And they went over Okafor's backstory, him killing his wife and doing all that kind of stuff. So what did you make of Thorne's? Like, I don't understand. It's just so weird. It's like the typical Walking Dead thing they do where they build up a character before they kill him, but they killed him last episode. You know?
Sure.
Like, we did not learn a goddamn new thing in this other than the fact that she was on a ghost tobacco ship mm-hmm. and was enjoying her final cigarettes when Okafor pulled her off and put her in this hell.
Yeah. I don't know. They're trying to build. They're trying to lay tracks to her buying into the CRM's overall plan and losing the faith that she had in Okafor to begin with.
Oh.
And they did a fairly good job with that.
And I guess they are leaning on Rick essentially using this relationship that she had with Okafor and trying to transition that to Michonne on the sly. Like, you know, where would you be if Okafor didn't give you a shot? And, you know, you tried to kill the man. Michonne's just, you know, acting extra killing zombies. It's all good.
Sure.
So they're talking about that, and the Major General rolls up and, you know, observes that Okafor, you meant a lot to Okafor, and you both have potential, and that he was skeptical they're worth the trouble, but his perspective's still changing. Especially about Rick Grimes. He says, you remind me of the Greek word pharmakon, which is how we got the word pharmacy, and it's got a dual meaning, poison and cure. And he's just not sure about you, Rick, but he gives him a book on martial arts and then asks to speak to Thorne privately.
Yeah, and by the end of this episode, he'll be promoting him yet again, even though he's not sure about this guy.
Yeah, and like, what does he? Yeah, and what changes his mind on that? I don't know.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we've you know, Thorne is about to get the Echelon briefing, which is that's going to be, I guess, a big turning point too. So,
yeah, let's just get there. So Thorne reveals to Rick that she's received the Echelon briefing. It's made her even more a believer than before. He also warns him that Michonne is on Beale's radar, so he springs into action, planning to bust them out in a daring nighttime escape.
Yeah, I think we also get the information about the Cascadia summit that's going to happen with all the top brass gathering. Like, everybody who's anybody in the CRM is going to be in this one place. Sounds like a real opportunity.
Yeah, and I think we probably got feedback on this, I'm sure. But I had a brain fart, and I mistook the Cascades for Adirondack Mountains in New York. We're actually over on the West Coast. We're up in, like, Seattleville, and I was thinking this is upstate New York. So fuck me for that. But yeah. And, like, I guess... it's too much to ask her to just tell Rick what the Echelon briefing is, because I'm sure part of the Echelon briefing is impressing upon her the only personnel that are Echelon rated should get the Echelon briefing.
Absolutely.
But it's still, like, I was looking, because, like, here's the thing. Like, I don't... Do you think Thorne's evil? Because if the Echelon briefing is what Okafor says it is, then, or what I'm assuming the Echelon briefing is, and she's okay with it, then I would think she was pretty morally compromised, you know? Like, if she's thinking, like, oh, yeah, bombing 100,000 citizens to cauterize a wound, that's something I'm on board with, but...
Sure.
So yeah, do you think...
I don't think he's, like, overtly evil. I think he's probably misguided. He's probably drank a little too much of the Kool-Aid, and he's doing things that reasonable people would think are over the line.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it in service of the 500-year plan and, you know, the Echelon stuff, whatever that is.
It's a little shaky to me because, like, I don't quite buy that Rick can talk her into taking Michonne in under Okafor's name. Like, I'm kind of there, but not quite. Like, Rick sells it too sweaty and too desperate. Like, oh, you know, it's for Okafor. You know, he does this kind of stuff, right? That's how we got... And I also don't believe that she will do it for Rick. Like, I think they could have convinced me of either of those things, but, like, they didn't really go all the way on either one of those points where it's like... they needed Rick to have maybe this is something that she should have realized herself. Like, maybe it's one of those things where Rick is panicking and he doesn't know exactly what to say, but she jumps in, like, right before he's about to ask her something stupid. She's like, you know, Rick, I've been thinking about Okafor and his project, and I got a real good feeling about this consignee Dana.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just I don't know. I she just said, I'm going to end you last episode, if you give me the slightest indication that you're acting weird. He is acting all kinds of weird, and she keeps on being like, she's like the, you know, the parent of a, you know, a 5-year-old terror child. Like, you know, Rick, if you act weird one more time, I'm going to turn this helicopter around and grab. And she just never does. She's always talking about what she's going to do and never does it.
They really kind of needed her to hear the speech that he gave Okafor as well, because I thought that speech was pretty convincing. The stuff about his dad and the
even though it's bullshit,
failing farm. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But it was a convincing speech. If she had heard that,
if she was
I
in the back seat of the helicopter
it.
And they pan to her looking thoughtful hearing that, yes.
But you can't, because
that.
Then the helicopter crashes, she has to live,
true.
Rick has to also meet Michonne, and they would the jig's up. But like
true.
Yeah. So they needed to figure out a different way for her to hear that. But that would have gone a long way toward believing that she thinks Rick is actually like on her side now.
And she thinks that if Rick hears the Echelon briefing, he'll be on the side, too, because, you know, when he kind of expresses incredulity, she's like, well, you haven't seen the things I've seen, heard the things I hear, and you will.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is the thing that really lights a fire into Rick's ass? The fact that Major General Beale is kind of like poking into Michonne?
Oh, to get Michonne out of there?
Well, she just makes a point that out of 7,000 people in the consignee force, Michonne is already on his radar. So it's like if he starts asking questions and then putting two to two together, like Rick's been kind of sloppy. There's a dude in town that knows, like, oh, yeah, Rick Grimes. Yeah, his wife, I've been drawing her. And so she's been walking like this is.
God, yeah.
Kind of out in the open. There's a lot of pieces you could pull together. Like, and I think that's what he's got. What's panicking him?
Does Beale already know? Like, this is the thing. I keep thinking, okay, there's a conspiracy here to do something bigger with Rick Grimes, because if she's on his radar, he already knows.
Yeah, that's the actor, because he always plays, Quinn plays this guy with a kind of a sparkle in his eye. And we praise that so much on the first, you know, when he's had that conversation with Rick, and it's like, you know, who found out about whom? But now it's just like, I don't even know if you have a plan, old man. You just kind of go around looking at everything like, you know, maybe you had a few too many shots before you reported to duty. It's like there's that sparkle in your eye. Is it is it like cagey, crafty wisdom, or is it just you're trying to cover with acting a big old flaw in the script? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because many times can you be like, I don't know, Rick, you seem like a suspicious little fucker that isn't down with the program. And now you do a bunch of suspicious, not down the program shit. Well, it's time to promote you. Like, what?
Right. Let me tell you about this Echelon thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It does feel a little off.
But Rick has got in his... This brings him into action. He starts noting the times of the dispersion blast. He gets out of stockpile supplies. He somehow has gotten these two tiny little adorable paddles.
Well, I mean, he's also got a collar or a leash here. I think he's just ready to use the Doc Johnson hand.
Oh,
he's setting up a
that's
a
not a bow
in.
Paddle. That's a sex toy. Uh-huh. I see. He's wanting Michonne to give him a couple. He's missed some birthday spanks, about five of them.
And a lot of them, yeah.
That's a lot. I mean, he's pushy. He's in his 40s, so that's a lot of. He's looking forward to that. He's going to need the collar and the leash to take it. Anyway, let's move on to he gets this stuff. He passes Michonne a note and says, tonight's the night. Go to your locker. I got a map. Follow it to the river. There's going to be a boat. We're going to get out of here. And I left you a little something. The Katana guitar riff when she picks up the... It's both too much and not enough for the moment.
Nice. Yeah.
It's like a little too much for just what it is, but also, I don't know.
Not enough for what they want it to be.
Yeah. Because, like, yeah, you got her. She's gone without her katana for, like, 24 hours, man.
I do like the way they cut that, though, with, you know, I left you something or whatever, and then you just see heads sliced in half.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we all knew it was the katana, but...
Oh, yeah.
Then they confirm it with the visual.
That Rick did all the securing of the tunnels here with the razor wire or the steel cable and securing all the locks, or is that part of my theory of them keeping a moat of dead people to eat the escapees?
No, I think her little smiles there say, "Oh, that's sweet."
Oh yeah,
Rick cleared the path for me.
Yeah,
how thoughtful. There,
I will say that with a whelming episode, they did have an overwhelming zombie kill. The zombie being crushed in the turnstile.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I hate this though. This scene makes everything worse because it retroactively makes the rest of Rick's journey stupid.
Oh.
So Rick is a man who has spent years of his life cutting his limbs off, trying to escape the CRM. He can't do it. He's a broken man who believes it's impossible to escape from the CRM. And here on the first attempt, Michonne gets the fuck out of the CRM, no problem. Literally walks out.
That's his point. The only way that happens is if someone's on the inside covering for you, and he's never had anyone on the inside to cover for him.
Rick Grimes cleared the way for her. Why doesn't Rick Grimes just kind of walk out? He could have done this at any time before Jadis came to him and said, I have a kill switch, dead man switch, and if you try and escape, I'm going to bust you. He could have walked out as soon as he became part of the inner circle. Apparently, he could have done this the whole time.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing going back to his little buddy in the water department is that then the whole him like, oh, I could just go along with the, say I go along with the pride, but like have my fingers crossed and the first time I get a chance by myself, just, yeah, it's becoming, all the things I said last episode about Rick being the stupidest man alive goes double for this episode because they make it very clear that this guy has got so much free time unsupervised. Right. He can do whatever the fuck he wants.
He can duck around any corner and have a makeout session, any tree.
This Rick in this situation is the one that gave up on Michonne and Judith, even though he's got the keys to the kingdom. There's a lot of sloppy Joe storytelling here, man. A lot of contradictions.
You're listening to The Watching Dead. We'll be right back. Keep your head down. Welcome back to The Ones Who Live.
So she gets to the water and she sees there's a canoe there, but no Rick. And she observes there's a consignee's body floating in the water. It's kind of her size and shape. And then she finds a Dear Michonne letter that says, you know, this is the only way. There's no way that I, you know, you got the only way to get out is have someone on the inside. I can do that for you, but no one can do that for me. I love you forever. And if you love me, you will leave.
Yeah. Classic.
Which I guess Michonne doesn't love him, you know?
I guess not. Yeah. I kind of like the way that they cut this too. I will say this is a pretty effective back and forth between Rick going through the tunnels and Michonne following sometime after.
And she's so happy, right, throughout the whole thing. Uh-huh. She has a big smile on her face. It's like, oh, me and Rick, we're going to get out of this fucking place. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Not awful, but what it does to the past of The Walking Dead, the past couple episodes, is bullshit.
So Rick tries to intimidate Jadis into helping him fake Michonne's death, but to his chagrin, he sees her report to her cleaning shift like everything's normal. I felt like this is a little weird too. Like, what? So he's like reverse blackmailing Jadis, being like, well, I let her go and I'm staying and I'm being true blue. And if you try to, if you don't go along with me, then I'm going to fuck it up for you. I'm going to tell him, I'm going to tell him Everest. Like, yeah, I guess that makes sense because if he can't back her the fuck off, then she will take her crew to Alexandria and kill. So yeah, this is not, and I think it would work, right? Because her only leverage was Michonne, you know, whereas this, it's like, you know, he's even, I think there's even this kind of open-ended, like, you know, maybe, he doesn't, I was gonna say, maybe he's leaving it open to like, maybe we can get together or like, this is my life now, but he tells her, he calls her stupid and says her hair is stupid too. So I think he's slamming the door pretty hard on the sexy times with Grimes. Sexy crime times.
I'm curious what he means. I think I know what he means when he says when he's talking about the corpse that he left in that river with the CRM jacket or the consignee jacket. He's like, oh, yeah, it looked close enough to Michonne after I tore its face and scalp off. So he's saying it was a black corpse. That's what he's actually saying there, right?
I suppose.
A black female corpse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Right, the same size and shape.
Sure.
Get to pull their face and their hair off. Sure, why not? So... that's the thing is like Jade is like after he kind of like fucks her over and blackmails her, she's like, are you sure there's nothing else keeping you there? And that's when Rick comes out with the, well, you saved my life and now you save hers. You're a hero with a shit haircut. I feel Jade is still trying to get in Rick's pants. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And then when Michonne shows up,
she has a 500-year plan to get into Rick's pants.
She has a 500-year plan. To get under his gun belt. The next day Michonne shows up and instead of like, you know, laying low and being it up, she makes a show. She does. But that's like also this is what Rick would do too. She just puts on a zombie killing clinic, gets cheers and whistles, mm-hmm. and Rick stink eyes her and she stink eyes him right back.
Thorne's noticing, and this feels like a problem.
It is becoming a problem, and he follows her to her and corners her someplace private so they can talk. She tears off his helmet, which I thought was hilarious, and tries to explain that, like, he just says to her face what he said in the note, and she just looks at him like literally, like, I think the look was subtitled really, because that's exactly the look she was given.
Speaking of subtitles, there was a weird note in the subtitles when Rick walks up behind her. He's like, you know, trying to surreptitiously get them into a place where they can talk, and he's like, ahead to the right, we can talk. But the captions absolutely said, ahead to the left, we can talk. How do you get that wrong? Like, you
stage
can have ChatGPT do your... yeah, probably.
ChatGPT or maybe they know about stage left.
They flip the shot after...
You could probably figure that out if you looked at what side her patch was on, because I don't think they have the three rings on both patches, right? They have the three stripes on both sleeves, but I think the three circles are only on like the right sleeve.
But could be.
Or ChatGPT just doesn't understand stage left, stage right.
Sure.
Which would make a lot of sense, actually. So Michonne keeps up her journal to Judith, and I don't know if it's in her mind or Rick gave it back to her with her sword. And she's agonizing again for the second episode in a row of knowing whether it's the right thing to do to wait for Rick. But then she has a chance encounter with an artist.
Oh, God.
That bolsters her faith.
Rick wasn't even drawing these pictures. I was under the impression the entire time that he was drawing them and leaving them. He was essentially doing Apocalypse Fiverr what he was doing.
And can I say this? Is this the best a city of 100,000 has to offer? Like,
yeah,
if I mean, you know, usually you go to like Walt Disney World or King's Island, whatever, you have your portrait drawn, like, you know, you can get a caricature style, you can get this style, you can get that style. But like, it actually looks like the people. I get it. He's like, this is Rick's drawing from memory, but he's drawing people like I don't know, like in a very. Like what an 8 or 9 year old would draw. Like it's just very, very simple. Very simple. There's no detail at all.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look like people. They look like cartoon characters.
They do. Yeah. I
thought that
know.
Was interesting. I mean, this guy makes money selling shitty portraits where everyone looks like ever. I looked at some of the kids and some of the girls and some of the women. They just all look the same.
Great. Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe artists are all A's, and this was the only artist who was a B.
That could be, yeah. But this motherfucker is getting paid, I don't know how much, to essentially, you know, draw an oval, two circles, a straight line, an upside down number 7, and 5 wavy lines. That's the only thing he can do. Yeah. This one has a cowboy hat. That's how you know it's supposed to be car. Yeah, it's dumb. But the idea that like this guy recognizes her, like, how, okay, for years Rick has been coming to him for portraits, okay, But you got to think, this guy's doing a brisk trade and carving TVs and cell phones and tablets into mementos and whatnot. I've seen Michonne's cell phone picture. This looks nothing like her. She's going to walk up and be like, and he recognizes her just from the context. It seemed kind of insane.
Yeah. And this should be, I guess, scarier for Michonne than it's played to be, because this is a man who knows that Rick is lying. This is a man who knows that Michonne is lying, that he could blow up their spot. And there's never a hint of that sentiment in the show.
Yeah. I mentioned there's a boy I can never get right. I'm like, oh, my God, they do know about Rick Jr., but they're talking about Carl, of course. And I think I think this came through maybe Twitter or Discord, but someone reminded me that, like, Rick really doesn't know about RJ. Did Michonne know she was pregnant when the bridge got blown up? I don't think he knows whether it's a boy or a girl or whatnot. If he even knew she's pregnant, I'm not quite sure on the timeline on that, but
no, and nobody wrote in to tell us
really
that Michonne didn't know or that Rick didn't know about RJ.
Feedback's as checked out as we are, Jim.
No, hundreds. Everyone listening wrote in to tell us that. So yeah, he never knew about RJ.
Okay. So Thorne explains to Michonne, because she just accepted this TV repair carver's fortune cookie wisdom. Thorne explains to Michonne that they're going to reassign her to the Cascade Outpost to help with clearing, and offers her answers if she plays along. I don't know why. I don't, like, even if you're respecting what Okafor did, Okafor took years to get you from consignee to raw recruit to where you could get an echelon briefing. And you're just going to be like, come here and clean and we'll tell you things.
He was feeling them out. He was prepping them for the questions that he was going to ask them here in this burnt out stadium. This is really fast tracked, because this is a 6-episode run and they got to do everything within those 6 episodes.
So while Thorne is giving this, like, kind of loyalty test to Michonne, she draws her dagger from behind the sheath in the small of her back, and Rick notices it and draws his weapon, half points it at her. Why did any of this happen? Why did she get this knife out? Was she going to
kill her if she gave the wrong answer? If she says,
what was the wrong answer?
I'm not interested. I think it was, I'm somebody who will follow. So this is complicated by Thorne sort of being wishy-washy on how she feels about Echelon and Okafor in this episode, because I don't know what is actually the right answer in her head. It feels like more and more the right answer is, I'm going to follow orders and go along with this Echelon CRM project.
Yeah. Maybe the check was just like, are you going to still lie about you being a B? Like, I need you to say, eventually, I need you to come out and say you're an A, this isn't going to work.
And she says, yeah, I'm the kind of person who pushes for answers to questions. So,
yeah. And then they're on their way out. She's reassigned to the Cascade Outpost, which is all the way across the other side of the country, armed with the kill stick only. And I did think it's funny that Thorne also called Rick on, like, you drew your gun on me. He's like, I was just backing you up, man. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
About that.
And there's a discussion here where it's implied that the CRM thinks that Michonne saved Rick's life.
Yeah, that was
the helicopter
story.
Crash.
Yeah.
When they show up, he's got her at gunpoint, arms in the air. Like,
I guess that's standard operating procedure. Like, thanks for saving you, but I gotta, you know, we got to go through induction or whatever.
Really? Wow. Okay.
It seems stupid,
right?
Your
friends, I'd hate to see how you treat your enemies.
Yeah, can you imagine this in like in any other movie where a guy comes in and rescues a soldier, and then the soldier's like, oh, thank God you saved me, I can't believe it. Oh, here comes a helicopter, get on your knees, I gotta put a gun on you, or they'll just chain gun you from altitude.
Right.
I don't know. Like, would they just do, like, if Rick didn't have a gun on her, would they just, like, kill everyone and ask questions later? I don't know.
Maybe.
So she briefs, quote unquote, Dana, aka Michonne, on the way to the Cascades, and, Michonne reasonably says, "There doesn't seem like there's anything out here. What's it protecting?" And she says, "Security of the Civil Republic and also expanded resources along the West Coast." Well, I have to ask, if Portland was falling because of lack of resources, interesting that after Portland falls, or is it Portland fall, or it's interesting that the CRM is moving to exploit the resources of the West Coast, that is, you know, you'd think these large cities would be privy to. It's starting to feel more like a smash and grab than a desperate cauterization.
No, I think they're telling a story here of they are taking out these cities systematically with plausible deniability, right? Yeah. They bust holes in their walls and let the walkers storm in order to take out the city.
Yeah.
And they are setting up this forward operating base so that they can do the same to Portland after they've done this.
Yeah, that's probably exactly. Yeah.
And it's a staging point.
And it's got this echelon thing's got to be some kind of shitty manifest destiny where it's like, you know, there's only going to be some cities going to be able to make it. And I vote for the 500 year plan. All the others are just kind of fucking around and they're not taking this seriously. And they're not.
they're going to break down the walls. They're going to bust into the Capitol building in Portland. And they're going to see, oh my God, the 600 year plan written out on their desk.
Oh, no.
They had the key. We just destroyed the future.
No, the real fear would be the 400-year plan. 600 years, well, we still get there 100 years before them. Fuck them. But 400-year plan, you're kind of fucked.
Oh, they were fast-tracking it, yeah.
That's right. So we get there, and we find out what the hell's going on. Thorne briefs her soldiers about their mission, which is to clear 200 deltas from a breach that somehow threatens the entire outpost. I don't know how 200 fucking zombies can threaten essentially an outpost that's not even manned. Like, what are they going to do? Just go around and mill in the courtyard a bit?
Mm-hmm.
They're not like teenagers. They're not going to grind your rails as skateboards or tag up your windows or some shit. Like, they're just going to, and you go in there with overwhelming force and you clear them out. Like, but whatever. Apparently, there's cliffs. And they can't bomb, and it's a real fucking problem. And these 16 dudes are the only things that can do it. And she says, I'm going to be the tip of the spear, because Okafor led from the front, and I want to be like Okafor. Unfortunately, the operation begins to deteriorate quickly. I left it really sketchy. What they're actually doing? What are they actually doing? What is the point?
So I think what they're trying to do is open up like a hole in the front lines of the walkers so that they can push in this poorly made Dalek and explode it like right in the middle and take them out quickly instead of just like hand-to-hand combat.
This thing looks like the garden tiller my granddad used to till up his garden fucked Dorothy from Twister and made some kind of industrial bomb. This looks like the most.
Yeah.
I don't know why the
love child of a wheelbarrow and a Dalek. That's what it looked like to me.
I don't know why you would design a bomb in this way, like to have this kind of interface to be
like
is it self-propelled? Wouldn't it be self-propelled at the very least?
Nice if it was.
But it looks
like
they're trying to push it out, and I don't know. Maybe Michonne's just stronger than Thorne, because Thorne gets this thing muddied up. She can't. She's trying to rock it back and forth. She's like, ah, fuck it. We got to, I guess, what is her plan? Kill more? Because it's not, the zombies aren't keeping you from going ahead, lady. You got stuck in the mud. So, like, you can kill as many zombies as you want. Like, you guys, you can kill them all. And then what do you need the fucking bomb for?
Sure. Yeah, it seemed like they were doing just fine without the bomb. Also, there's typical Walking Dead bullshit in here where they just don't sweat the details on the directing. Like, you can clearly see that the back wheels of this thing are just trenched, right? Like, they fell into the mud and they're sunk, and Thorne's trying to lift them out.
Yeah,
she can't,
like,
push
halfway
it forward
up the rim of the wheel.
And then Michonne comes in, and instead of tipping it forward, which would pull those back wheels up and get it out, she tips it backwards, which would dig the wheels further in and make it harder to push out. And she pushes it out, no problem. Yeah. And maybe she's just Herculean. She's just,
I mean, she's
beast,
clearly strong,
it.
But like, I
felt
like
than Thorne. Yeah.
I think the play would have Rick come over and help her from the beginning, and then they do it together. And but then you wouldn't get, because that's the other thing is like, so Michonne gets this thing out of the mud, and Thorne sees it and has a complete fucking heeny fit about it. Mm-hmm. Fall back, consign, because she sternly told her, you are not a frontline troop, you are a rear guard. You need to stay back here with your kill stick. And she's mad that she's disobeying direct orders, and Michonne is grinning like an idiot. I've understood her other fierce grins before. Like, is she just a war junkie? Does she just love this shit? Like, it's not fighting for family.
Yeah,
she just loves fighting zombies. Because like, I don't know what would make her smile like this. It's not like if she was smiling after Rick joined her, that would be one thing. Like, yeah, not, we can do anything together. But like her just kind of doing it by herself and being like, ha 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 ha, you know, like,
yeah, it's super weird.
I don't
get
it, man. It's weird. It's weird. It's weird affect.
Yeah. Bombs are so stealthy. Didn't they say they wanted to do this all stealthy? Like, they're using pneumatic rifles and kill sticks only, cold weapons, they call
them. I think they went loud. At some point
with a bomb,
know?
With an exploding Dalek. Yeah.
I think that's like, yeah, they wanted to like push this into the zombies' midst and then fire it up and it makes all this sound and then it explodes.
And these people never heard of Guts. I mean, this shit would all be taken care of if they just knew about Guts.
Oh my God, you're right. Why don't elite zombie commandos gut it up? They should have like,
it's the ultimate solution.
There should be like, you just step onto a lift, it dunks you into a gut tank, and it's like an assembly line. You step up, it's like C-3PO in the oil bath, except for zombie guts.
Right.
And totally. Then you just, you go forward.
And you just waltz that thing in. You don't have to worry about stealth or weapons. You just walk it in, walk out, and blow it up.
Yeah. Or honestly, in the age of the Whisperers, like, you're wearing all this armor, throw a couple zombie skins on top, you know?
Yeah, sew them right in.
Go native, man. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know why they don't do that, because this would make the scene of Rick and Michonne making out in this forest after they blow that shit up a lot 10 times grosser if they're just covered head to toe in zombie guts. But
true. They can wipe their lips down. Yeah, just get out the kerchiefs, wipe the lips, and then go at it.
Yeah, so they got Danai Gurira and Andy Lincoln, and they're gonna make them make out every episode. They got a contractual obligation to suck face once every episode, and so far,
and they do that because this is Rick, right? This is Rick reemerging, the Rick that she knows, the guy who
their team
isn't like, broken. Yeah,
they can still pull in the same direction when they have to. Maybe that's what her thing is. That like this was. Maybe that's what it is. This proves that Rick has got her back, and he's not loyal to the CRM. Because if he's leaning to the CRM, their commanding officer gave him an order, and he directly disobeyed it. So like maybe that's why she does the other crazy thing she's about to do.
Oh, God.
So Thorne, I don't think she sees them make out, but she sees the way they're moving together and the fact that Michonne is clearly in it. But I don't can you tell me why Thorne raises her weapon to shoot Michonne? Like, what is going through her mind?
She doesn't know if she can handle that A.
It's a whole lot of A.
Yeah, it is.
It's a whole lot of A. Two of them. Pair A that she's got to handle all by herself. She's one A, they're two. They could be a triple A and then be really unstoppable, but
oh God, if Daryl was in there, triple A. I think that's it though. She just realizes, oh, these two together, both of these A's are more than I can handle.
But she's got Michonne in the crosshairs of a scope, and Rick sees it at the last minute, drags a zombie's face in front of it, and then says there's only 10 deltas left, which means they've killed 190 of them. Don't have to lose our shit about this. It's everything. And that she drops her gun.
Oh, they make a big deal about something I assume is going to come into play later. These these PRBs, personal rescue beacons, maybe is what they might stand for. But like the personal
the
tracking device for the CRM
helicopter
choppers
within 300 miles. Yeah.
Yep. That's going to be used later. Obviously.
It's probably what Jadis used at the junkyard to call him in the first place. Right.
Yeah.
Any word on what RDIM stands for? Ridiculous Delta emulation munition. I was trying to think like, what the hell is an RDIMM? I thought, like, well, maybe this is that. Before I saw it, I actually paused. I'm like, I want to see what an RDIMM is. And I'm like, yeah, I can't find it. I'm RDIMM military equipment, munitions. Nothing. I was getting like, okay, so I spent a couple minutes like, all right. And then if I'd seen it, I'd be like, no fucking way. Has even a Pentagon in its hottest fever dream come up with this shit?
Oh, so yeah. It stands for Ridiculous Dalek Impersonation Machines.
I think you cracked it, man. I think you cracked it. Okay. We're going into the final scene. After stunt with the RDIMM, Thorne regrets sticking her neck out for these two knuckleheads. Worse, Jadis smugs up and reveals that she's transferred permanently to the Cascade Post. Under this pressure, Rick vows to take Michonne back to Philly himself. But Michonne has her own plans, as she often does.
Jesus.
Where is this going?
At the end of this episode, man.
Yeah, it's like we just get bad. We just get L after L after L. Like, Jade is coming here just to fuck with Rick. And so she continued being our primary antagonist, I suppose. Is there any...
Yeah, So, I mean, I think it's what you said earlier, that they are setting up the scenario in which lying... At the end of this, lying dead at Rick's feet is... Everyone from the CRM and Jadis, everyone who could possibly threaten him. I just don't believe it. I mean, okay. The saving grace is this council that they're doing, or this summit, right? With all the brass. Maybe if you cut the head off this freaking Hydra, another one doesn't grow back, but I don't know. You got a lot of A's and a lot of people with really fervent beliefs in the Echelon project. You got Thorne. I mean, Thorne might be dead at his feet too, but I just don't, I don't know if you can decapitate this monster and have it leave you alone.
I think if you tell me that they kill all the top brass and Jadis, that it doesn't matter. Like, the CRM might recover, but Rick and Michonne will get away. That's what I think. Now, I guess you could debate the morality. Is like, what if all of Philly dies, like falls to the deltas because, or outside influences because they did decapitate the best chance for, like, you could, it's an interesting moral question, right? I don't think the show's going to give a fuck about exploring it, but like, I do think that's interesting. It's like, do Rick and Michonne have the right just for themselves and their children to extinguish almost a, like, what is it? Is it a million people? No, it's almost.
A couple hundred thousand people.
They've
done a good job of telling me that the CRM is not the CR, and that the Civic Republic could still continue on. They're the farmers. They run the society, but the CRM is the military organization around.
But they've also
done
a good job of telling me that that's a sham. That this is something that, like, the military kind of allows to happen as a way to kind of, like, you know, so almost as a way to keep the citizens even more in the dark about what they're doing. You know, like, you manage the city and we'll stay out of that, but we're gonna keep you safe. We're gonna make sure we keep the supply lines and don't ask too many questions. I don't know.
Keep you secret. Keep you safe.
And it's still, like, I suspect the CRM is evil because of all the stuff that they're alluding to, but we haven't had any real evidence.
No. I mean, the closest thing is it's hinted that the CRM is responsible for Omaha, so.
That's the thing. And if that's true, then that seems pretty shitty, but I guess we'll see. Rick, boy, he really takes it to Michonne. He's just so fucking scared, I think. A lot of anger comes from being scared. And he hears that Thorne is wanting to ship Michonne back. Beale wants to see him privately because he's getting promoted after this fiasco. Jadis is here wanting him to look at her quarters. And, you know, conspicuously having Michonne see her, and he's like, I'm going to knock you out and put you on that boat if I have to. I belong here. You don't. Everything we had is broken. That was fucking wild to him, have him say that to Michonne right to her face.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying to break it to the point where she will give it up. just go home without him.
Is he going to give her the old Yeller treatment where you throw rocks at her to get out of here, Michonne? I don't want you around anymore. Get out of here.
That's essentially what he's doing. Yeah. He's throwing emotional rocks.
And it connected because she's like catatonic on the Hello Ride home, but there is a severe storm and they're riding with the door open. And Michonne, in just a desperate, you know, keep on believing a little longer type move, grabs Rick in a bear hug and jumps them both out of the helicopter.
Rick, sitting next to an open door in a chopper, not wearing a seatbelt. I don't think she undoes his belt to get him out. Maybe there's a quick insert shot there, but...
Yeah, I'd buy it if she could. Why is the door not shut?
I mean, it's shit outside.
It's such a stormy. Yeah, that's the thing that I could see you go an open door if you're, you know, cruising in the desert and it's hot in there and whatnot. But if it was like cold or especially cold and wet, I mean, it's never warm and it's never like a warm rain in Portland and Seattle and those areas, right? You know,
I mean, maybe in the summer, but. I don't know, man, but yeah, this is bonkers. I mean, them jumping out of a chopper at any altitude. I mean, it's the speed.
Yeah.
What are they traveling? Maybe they're just
lifting off, but like what would you do that for? You knock yourself onto the tarmac of the CRM's runway. So they have to be up at a fairly right. And I know they do fly kind of nap at Earth. They do fly pretty low, but the altitude from which Rick got shot down would easily be fatal. Not to mention that either one, the fall would kill you and the speed that you're going was going to kill you. Both of those together absolutely kill you. And you know, we talked about what did we talk about this? On the True Detective podcast that if you ask me, could a person survive falling out a 20,000 foot fall from an airliner? I'd say no fucking way. But I do know that a stewardess on, I think either a French or Russian airline did that. Like 30 years ago, but there's no fucking way I believe that two people falling from the same aircraft would survive an impact. Like maybe one, some freak occurrence, no fucking way two of them. So how are they going to do it?
And the stewardess that survives that isn't like, oh, I'm the person who survives when the plane's going down.
And do you think they're going to do the Bush League thing?
She's just as scared for her life as everybody else, right? Like there's... You can't count on being the one person, and in this case, the two people who defy the odds here.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to do the bullshit thing where, like, we're going to start the next episode is going to be a few minutes ago, and it's going to show the Michonne from her perspective, and there she's looking out, and she sees, like, a giant lake that they're about to fly over, and, you know...
Every single episode
retroactively explain that.
Yeah. No, I mean, she can't. She's facing the wrong direction to even see anything like that.
No, she's facing... I think she's facing looking forward and Rick's looking back.
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're on the right side of the chopper. She's looking back at him.
Hold on a second. I've got the file right here. Let me double check this.
All right.
We decided to do a real quick look at the episode since we had... And it turns out we're wrong about everything. The door started shut... Michonne was riding in the forward, as far as I can tell, the forward-facing compartment, unless these helicopters' doors open against the wind instead of with the wind, which I'd seem to be, of course, I don't know. I've seen there are dims. Maybe there are
helos. So she's looking backwards in the helicopter from where they came. She's looking forwards.
Yeah. Unless, again, the door opens towards the front of the cockpit. It slides open
like a
minivan.
Look at the direction of travel. Which direction are they traveling? That's what I
fucking want to can't
know.
Tell. It's like it's CGI rain. Sky. Yeah, it's all blank. Yeah. So, but like again, unless the minivan doors open towards the front of the cockpit, which would go against the flow of air, I don't know. I don't know about that. But yeah, and then also in one smooth motion, she unbuckles herself, gets up, opens up the door, which falls open, and then grabs Rick by his restraints, and then they go out. So we
okay. Does she have a parachute? Is that how this whole situation is going to be resolved? Did she also grab and put on and secure the harness of a parachute in that smooth motion?
Maybe they're just dead, and they'll have an episode. They'll have Beale give him a eulogy, and it's like, guess where they weren't the ones who lived. And then they'll play fart noises for 3 hours for the next 3 episodes.
I mean, unless they lie to us with the next time on, which AMC might do, there's or unless the next time on is a flashback or a fever dream as they're both dropping to their deaths. I don't know. It what's the point of next time on?
I don't watch
the cliffhanger.
Them.
Not
I don't watch
I,
them.
I would love to not watch them, but they're immediate and they're in sandwiched in between the stuff that I kind of do want to watch, which is Andrew Lincoln making excuses for this scene. So
on AMC Plus, yeah, you're right. I always bail out, and then you can just watch those extras separate.
Sure,
but yeah, I don't like the like as a matter of policy, we usually don't comment on those things because I do think it's like fuck, you're gonna watch the next episode, right?
Is it a Why spoiler to say this is not the end of the
no,
ones who
I don't
live.
Think
Rick
it's
and
a spoiler to say Rick and Michonne
land
are the
head
ones
first
who live.
On a huge pile of rocks and die
on the Cascade Mountains, just shatter on the Olympic Peninsula and
right. That's not a spoiler.
No.
The spoiler is how the hell are they going to get out of this?
Yeah, it's a very Adam West Batman cliffhanger where it's like, just what the fuck? How?
It's so stupid. The only good thing that it does is now you wonder, how are they going to, in three episodes, destroy the CRM? Because that's what needs to happen here. Because Rick's never going to be led back into the upper ranks. Jadis has the dead man switch. She has to now pull that ripcord.
Would you be surprised if Major General Beale shows up? He's like, God damn, Rick, you survived falling off a helicopter. I'm going to make you a major.
You survived. You destroyed one of my helicopters and survived that. And now you fell out of another and you survived again. You must be invincible.
You're invincible. Yeah.
Yeah. I still don't know about you, though.
I still don't know about you, but you're good enough swearing my sword. That's the episode, man. That's the episode.
Right. Well, we got some feedback.
Glad we watched that last scene. It probably saved us a lot of feedback.
Oh, yeah. But we have a bunch to consider.
Oh.
Maybe we should get into that.
Yeah, let's do that. Before we get to the feedback, just want to let you know, twd@baldmove.com is how you send us feedback. Also, if you want to know what we're up to, our social media is @baldmove is the best place to find out. Finally, if you like to support what we're doing here, get ad-free feeds as well as extra content. We're about to talk about Constellation on Apple TV+, the Netflix live-action Avatar. That's exclusively for club members, as well as, again, ad-free feeds. First run, Bald Movies just did Dune Volume 2 a couple weeks back. You need to be a club member. You need to support us. Support.baldmove.com is how you find out all the ways you can keep Bald Move bald moving. Jim. You opened up twd@baldmove.com in your mail client, and what did you find?
I found Carrie writing in saying,
"All right,
much like you, I gave up on The Walking Dead back when Rick went missing. I'm only back to ride along with you." Carrie has a question about maybe how Nat's last words to Michonne, you know, about knowing when to go, might foreshadow her story overall. Carrie says, playing along with Rick's plan of pretending to be someone else is not Michonne. I think she'll get tired of this place and leave Rick behind. Rick will keep telling her they will leave, but something always comes up. Think, you know, a married man telling his lover he's going to leave his wife, right? I don't think we'll have a happy ending with these two. And Carrie is apparently the person who we met at Con of Thrones years ago.
Yeah,
the Lady Olenna.
Queen of Thorns. I do remember you. Well, I actually think that is a better ending than the show probably will come up with on its own. Like, that's a very nuanced, tragic, that like all the things they survived, that Rick just got mentally broken by an authoritarian regime because he got separated from his group, and that he was never the strong one, the group integrity all together pulling ahead. I think that's a really interesting place to leave the two. Like, again, it's tragic, but shit, The Walking Dead is tragic. Do we think they're going to give us some version of a happy ending? Because like I haven't really thought about this yet. Carrie's really got my wheel spinning, because if they leave these two alive, then they might be able to come back. And I don't think either. I think Andrew and Danai are both like, this is our last hurrah, Mr. Gimple.
Yeah.
You let me write two episodes and I'll come back. I'll take a pause on my Marvel shit and come back. Has anybody seen Michonne? We'll be right back. Has anyone spotted Rick? We're back with the ones who live. But on the other hand... Yeah, no, I just like, there's no way. There's no way. There's no way that they leave them both alive, right?
I mean, look, AMC is always looking for the next spinoff of The Walking Dead. It's really the only thing keeping the network afloat at this point.
Is that even true? I feel like they've had lots of like recent successes, but
I don't know.
Also, this show's not even pulling a one share, so good luck with
right.
that.
But I could see them going a little bit tragic here, where Rick does stay behind. Michonne does leave him because she thinks he's broken. And Rick, you know, has not bought into the CRM's bullshit. He's bought into Okafor's bullshit. And 20 years from now, when Rick is 70 and Michonne is 60, they come back with another spinoff, The Ones Who Lived, with a D on the end. And now Rick is leading the CRM. He's taken out Beal, and he's got to contend with a Michonne-led Alexandria, who's upgraded their watches with the new technology she's got from Nat. And now they're fighting. Attack helicopters versus upgraded watches.
The civil Rick military.
Michonne.
I like it.
The civil Rick Michonne. Because why not? I mean, what does RDM stand for?
True.
Rick device, including Michonne. That's what RDM stands for. I don't know,
yeah,
man. We'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah. Chris comes into our mailbox and says, you guys were trying to figure out Jadis' new hairstyle. I'll keep it short and sweet. It's the simple Jack from Ben Stiller and Tropic Thunder. Oh,
yeah.
Jadis, you never go full RDM. You went full RDM.
The haircut is the RDM. Yeah.
Also, if they're going to kill Nat, could we see him change? It would have been the first on-screen little person walker whaler we've ever seen. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Nope. Can't see him change.
I guess that's more of a grace note for him, you know? Like,
yeah, I assume Michonne would have put him out, like put him down once
plus
she
there's
realized,
no way
oh,
George
dead.
Romero hasn't given us a little person walker, right? There's no way in all of the of deads he's done that there's not a little zombie. I feel like in those ones where they're like all chained up and performing in bands and doing circus and shit, there's got to be.
In Land of the Dead, sure.
Yeah,
there might be one in Land of the Dead. Ah, man, I can't remember.
Oh, my God. Nat could have made film hit. Okay, now I'm kind of going back on Chris's side. Yeah, you should let Nat made film history.
Yeah. All right, let's see what Bill S. has to say. He's gonna take me to task on one of my views. He says, may I suggest, Jim, watching Special Ops Lioness? This is apparently a Paramount Plus show.
Oh boy,
Taylor Sheridan
really
series.
Really dumb title, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, right? You very clearly learn that the best way to tell an elaborate undercover lie without forgetting what you may have told and eliminating inconsistencies when they question you multiple times is to keep everything as close to the truth as possible, but just change a few things to hide information that could potentially be used to uncover you. Michonne must have seen this before the fall because she did a pretty good job of blending real facts with misinformation when she was being interrogated.
Yeah, no, that's a liar pro tip is, and then the fact, if they try to dig deeper into your backstory, you can just delve into the real, like, oh, this, they're asking me about Negan's backstory. I can just give him as many of those details as I want. And they'll all be self-consistent. And, oh, this is a Carol memory, so I'm going to go back and do, you know, yeah, this is a prison arc. It works really well.
She should just use Carol's life, right? Just
sure. I'm just Carol.
Just wholesale adopt Carol's life. Yeah.
Put me in front of an oven. Let me bake some cookies.
Yeah, but don't put me on the business end of a bazooka because...
Look at the flowers, Jadis. Look at the flowers.
Fuck you up. Yeah.
Special Ops Lioness. It's a bold move to have a show that you can the most likely abbreviation is SOL. You know?
Yeah.
Mac says, I'm late to the party here in this topic because it addressed something revealed in episode one, but this A and B bullshit, unforgivable for me. It's clear that when Rick blew up the bridge and we first heard Trash Lady say enthusiastically, I've got an A, they had no idea. Have they been gassed? Because I kind of thought that like that she was saying that he's an A, he's a definite A.
And then at the end, she calls back and says, nah, I was wrong. He's a B.
Does she really?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay. She says, enthusiastic, I've got an A. They had no idea what that meant at the time. They just thought it was some cold shit to say. And here we are years later, and they finally explained A's are leaders. They had to retcon the whole thing to try to make it sense, and they failed. It's so lazy. I mean, this goes, if you want to go back, this goes back to the A and B car. This goes back to the A cars, right? Like, this is the short, but like, if you really think about that, why the fuck would the CRM have the same classification system as the fucking cannibals?
Well, the cannibals were another group that they approached and had on the lookout for them. With. I mean, that's the explanation. It has to be.
You keep them Tasha Yar stakes coming, and what's the trade here that they're doing?
And why not kill the A's? Look, if the CRM doesn't want A's, you sort them and then you murder the A's and you hold the B's for the CRM.
I think it's because, and I kind of vaguely know this because of some of the World Beyond wiki reading, but I think the CRM uses A's to experiment on. Like, they do freaky deaky zombie science experiments on them.
You're risking making a zombie A?
Oh my God.
You don't
want
undead A's out there.
An Alpha Z? You don't want that.
No. Crazy.
So they had the retcon whole thing to try to make sense in a field. It's so lazy. We find out the A's are leaders and the Civics Republic explicitly does not want A's and typically kills them when they find them. That's what we learned in episode one. So why in the hell would Trash Lady enthusiastically exclaim she has an A and then go to all the trouble of saving Rick, airlifting Matt, giving medical attention, and carting him off to a place that doesn't want him? It's awful. They're awful. I hate them. I mean,
yeah, you simultaneously have to believe that Rick has a ton of value to the CRM, but also that he's not an A. What value do bees have? The value of like stuff them into consignment and
like breeding stock. You're hoping to get, you know, like a bunch of you need some kind of cowed, traumatized population base. It's not going to like kick up a fuss while you're kicking your 500 year plan off and you're just going to work into breeding some. I don't know. It's weird. It's all weird. It's all vaguely eugenics kind of sounding shit to me. I don't. That doesn't. It goes against the ethos of the show where you can't judge, like, you know, use Eugene a B. Well, until he bites his first dick and now he's an A. Like, this whole show is about people, unlikely survivors becoming fierce badasses just because they've got each other's back. So, like, I don't know. But that might be the whole point. That might be the whole point. They're going to deconstruct the CRM's A, B bullshit.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Carly, who says, I wasn't planning to watch any of the spinoffs after the last season of the main show because I was disappointed in the way the season ended. However, I was listening to three whole podcasts about them, including yours. On the Last of Us Podcastica episode, our friend over there at Jason over at Podcastica.
Yeah.
They were covering Gone. Something about the host's reaction made me actually want to watch The Ones Who Live, so I signed up for AMC Plus. I watched the first two episodes and found the pacing to be very rushed. Then I watched the first two episodes of the Daryl Dixon show, and they were so much better. The pacing allowed the audience to get used to the new setting and the new characters. I don't understand how AMC can see those Daryl Dixon episodes and let the Messy Ones Who Live episodes be so awful. They have actual proof that they can make a good spinoff, and yet they choose not to. Unforgivable. I think you're not taking one thing into consideration here.
Mm.
And that thing's name is Scott Gimple. Scott Gimple's hands are much more on this project.
I guess Scott Gimple was the showrunner for Walking Dead Daryl too, was he not? I know it
he's an executive Kang, producer.
So who is showrunning that? Because they have like all of the Walking Dead people. You've got Scott Gimple, Robert Kirkman, David Alpert, Gail Ann Hurd, Angela Kang, like all Greg Nicotero, all Norman Reedus. Like, who the fuck is show running this by committee?
It says the television series was created by Dave Zabel.
Okay. I mean, I will say that
Zabel,
like,
I don't know how you say his name, but
Daryl Dixon had its problems, but it was a pretty consistently entertaining, well-made show by Walking Dead standards.
By Walking Dead standards, sure. I'll give you that.
And I got to say, the other thing is, like, I saw the budget on that show cleared away through. I felt like this, I don't know, after the first, there was definitely some cool stuff in the first two episodes, but, like, I feel like maybe they're kind of cheaping out this, but this also didn't have a lot of just stuff to do, a lot of action.
Yeah, no, I think it's the Gimple effect. Gimple has certain sensibilities about the show that he just doesn't care about certain things that we care about as television watchers, and he cares more about other things that we don't care about or don't think are as have as much merit. So,
and we say we're talking about the 18 million people that were watching Walking Dead and no longer. I mean, this is not you and I. Like, there's no, this. No, is,
we're talking
about a pretty big sample size at this point.
The 100 million people who watch Game of Thrones because it was awesome, not because they had people falling out of helicopters and shit and surviving.
Yeah. I just, that's the thing that drives me crazy, because she's saying it's like, you know, how did they make a good show and then let a bad show get made? It's unforgivable. It seems like it is. Like, I don't understand why you keep giving Scott Gimple this shit. Like, you like, even Fear the Walking Dead, which I thought was a shit show, like, was widely regarded as kind of like having this Angela Kang-esque resurrection in season 3. And they gave it back to Gimple. Like, Gimple transferred off The Walking Dead. Kang took over here, and he promptly ran it into the fucking ground by all accounts. And, like, why do you give this guy so many opportunities to fuck this up? And what do you get out of it? You get a show that, like, not even a million people are watching on primetime. And maybe they're happy the AMC Plus numbers are getting. I have no idea. They're not reporting that stuff. But... Mm. You know, I don't know. I mean,
you don't make 7 spinoffs, 8 spinoffs of a show unless you're actually, like, happy with the results, and they're happy with these results.
But
obviously
they could have been better.
Manifestly. So.
Mark says, I review all things Walking Dead for GameSpot.com, and I wanted to note that originally AMC said we get all 6 episodes to watch for review, but they only end up sending us the first 4. In my experience, they've not done this before, so I take it to mean some wild stuff goes down in the final 2 episodes, and they're wary of spoilers getting out. No critic I'm aware of has seen the whole season. I know The Walking Dead tends to end on a high note, even in a down season, but here's hoping they're doing something really bold in the back end of the series. By the way, I'm sure you've received a dozen emails about this, but Rick doesn't know about RJ. That's why he doesn't mention him. I found this confusing at first too, but went back confirm. Well, I mean, Mark, obviously they're run a much more professional ship there at GameSpot.com than they do at BaldMove.com, because I've been clowning him on Rick Jr. for a while, but
makes me, you know, a little nervous knowing that we have a professional critic listening to this.
Jesus.
Somebody, a real critic, somebody who's doing actual work and not just bullshitting on a microphone for 2 hours. Kidding. I included the RJ stuff for Mark because he was the first to get it in, but so many people wrote in about that.
Oh, I bet. I actually thought you were not. I was like, God damn, that's actually crazy. It kind of shows how far we've fallen if nobody is correcting our obvious mistakes. But so there's 2 ways to look at this. One is the show's still being made. Like, you know, they're still finishing. Like, it might even be stuff like music and subtitles and things like that, and they weren't ready to give all that away up front. It could be that the season ends terribly
and they're essentially
embargoing by not letting that get out to anybody. And it could be that the last 2 episodes are fucking gonzo crazy, big spoilers they don't want getting out. It's tough to say.
Or they're drip feeding them. I mean, I've absolutely seen that where you get 8 out of 10 episodes dropped, and then come the week of episode 7, they'll drop the final 2 for critics. So
that's like the Apple TV loves doing that. They love giving you like the first 6 episodes and then dripping them out to others just in time. So only time will tell. I agree. That's like, I've seen this before a couple of times, not just in Apple. HBO's done it a couple of times. I think Paramount always did that with like the Picard stuff and the Strange New World stuff. So it's not totally unprecedented, but you do wonder why they do that.
But yeah, I guess Mark's saying like AMC doesn't tend to do this, so maybe there's something big.
AMC's the one nut, one of the, that and like Netflix, I think, are the only two nuts we've never cracked. Never have we ever gotten those outlets to get us a screener.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not real hard to figure out why, maybe.
On the AMC side, yeah, because Gimp will probably own shares in AMC, and he's got a special file. He's got a special email filter that says if a Bald Move requests screener access, it goes right to his desk so that he can he can deny.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Christian. He says, not sure if this needs explaining, but how does Rick operate the spring action bayonet on the Fistatron 2000? It's mind controlled. He just thinks.
I mean,
and the bayonet.
Like, I guess, like, in real life, amputees operate their prosthetics by, like, flexing certain muscles to, like, you know, make a, you know, make a bulge or whatnot. So, like, yeah, you could just be doing that. You just got a simple trigger. Now, it seems like that'd be dangerous for a rocket fist, but...
Oh, yeah.
Or, I mean, the spring, it's like, you know, you're just, like, sitting here and you get a muscle spasm, you get a muscle twitch. But hope you don't have your hands in your pockets.
It houses one of those millions, billions of iPhones that haven't been drawn on yet. He just says, hey, Siri, activate bayonet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Google at home certified. Mm-hmm. All right, up next. Oh, Ben's got a long take. Says, I'm that crazy guy that was binging the pod to catch back up to the finale of the last season and felt compelled to write in again. For the entirety of the pod, I was more or less with you guys on how much The Walking Dead deserved to be shat upon. I mean, it was just shitting on a well or prepared pile of shit as it is, so oh well. But I have to say, the episode covering episode 2 of The Ones Who Live made me think you actually did cross over into just being too hard on it with some of the criticisms. My main one being about how Michonne is this hardened warrior who never smiles and was out of character when she was doing so with Nat. I can think of so many instances in the main show where she'd flash her pearly whites with an ear-to-ear grin, but the main thing is her whole arc was that Carl and then Rick taught her it's okay to feel again and be herself and live life again. This is the person who we saw smiling and the person who we saw smiling in the last few seasons of the main show, and is a perfectly tie back to why she's so attached to Rick. I also feel like with other shows, you maybe wouldn't have harped on exactly how long the exposure to the chlorine gas was for it to be lethal. It's a matter of a minute or two. Who really cares? I don't know. I think I would definitely harp on. I tend to harp on things that strike me as bullshit. Like, because, like, sure, you know, I'm not the smartest guy. I didn't go to college. But like, if I know, really, chlorine gas is that you can just kind of like moonwalk out of it and it's all good to go. There's also the RJ thing. I'm sure you've already got a ton of emails about it. But yeah, okay, we know about that. Don't get me wrong, the episode has its issues. I don't want to see you guys become a self-fulfilling prophecy where you actually do turn into the guys that some listeners were accusing of you when things in the main show started to go downhill. Be clear, I've been on the same page as you guys for seasons and seasons and seasons, but I really do think you guys are edging into overly pessimistic territory at this one. I mean, I get it, Ben. Like, I also have gotten this particular email a few hundred times in my Walking Dead career, where it's like, you know, you guys were a little hard on this episode. But I'll tell you what it is. When we stop taking The Walking Dead seriously, we start shitting on it more and we start getting lazy about shitting on it. Like, we start to forget that Rick doesn't know who RJ is, and we start losing track of whether a Black Hawk was flying with its windows and doors down in the middle of a hurricane or not. Because there's nothing in the show's professionalism that would tell us that that would be ridiculous. Rick just forgot that he has a baby son. That, like, you know, sure, they forgot that they had doors on this fucking thing and they can shut him in inclement. There's nothing to read. Like, most shows, when I would say something like, well, that's pretty stupid, they wouldn't really do that, right? That wouldn't happen on The Last of Us or something like that.
Legit question. Yeah.
I go back and like, oh, maybe I should check that scene. But like, here it's just kind of like all vibes, man. You know, if you think of a funny joke, you go with it. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just a consequence of us not taking the show seriously. It's one of the reasons why Jim wanted to stop doing the show, because he's like, we're kind of like, are we hurting the coverage of our other shows by covering this ridiculous show in a beneath us kind of way?
Sure.
Clearly, we've come around on that concept, but it's something I think we both worry about. That, like, you know, if we stop taking this show seriously and all of our criticisms come off as lazy, then, you know, why would anyone listen to us except for the people who the growing majority of the people to just listen and don't watch, because they're none the wiser, you know?
sure. We could get things factually incorrect and they wouldn't
Rick
know
flying a helicopter to top down through a hurricane. Yeah, that sounds like Scott Gimple. All right.
Helicopter. Yeah. Yeah. So this is rough. Like, I feel like I'm in a limbo here. Like, Rick, like, you guys as audience members are trying to break me and gaslight me, because Diz in Seattle wrote in with, like, this idea.
Oh, wait.
Of
I did want to, because Ben shared that that we've inspired him to take a leap of faith and start working for myself, and wish him luck. Best of luck. It's a scary, yeah, exciting thing you're doing. I did this 3 or 4 times, and it was only the last one that stuck. So, mm-hmm, you know, to an amazing success or a glorious failure. Good luck, Ben.
Yeah, it'll be one of those two things.
Almost certainly.
Or maybe a long, slow failure. And
like The Walking Dead.
Yeah, and you're in good company there. So, yeah, like I said, I feel like a broken man, because Diz in Seattle writes in, and he has some comments about the show and then some comments about our content on the show. Gentlemen, first, I want to thank you for returning to the 5-alarm structure fire that is The Walking Dead universe. Originally gave up on the series after the death of Carl, and when I stopped watching, I also stopped listening to the podcast. A few weeks later, I saw the podcast in my feed where you two also noped out. And then in 2021, I had the knowledge that the series had an end date and decided, fuck it, I put in 8 seasons, what's 3 more? And I rewatched the dismal 8th season, and not only was season 9 with Rick's quote-unquote death and the Whisperers my favorite season, I also returned to the podcast for the birth of Guy Ferrari, Aaron's insane prediction of Eugene building a nuke from a crashed satellite and riding it into Alpha's horde, and of course, the Hawacha. Also, did you guys consider that with the CR having a settlement in Omaha, the guys from the bar in the season 2 episode Nebraska had good information? There was some sort of safe zone in Nebraska. What would the show have looked like if our group went with them instead of killing them?
Well, they'd been chlorine gassed to death. Yep. Somewhere right around the 5 years into the future, I guess.
Yeah. So,
I will die on the hill that season 9, especially after Rick gets blown off the bridge, I'll put that up with any other run of the ball of The Walking Dead for best run of The Walking Dead.
For sure.
Your season 3 prison arc, fuck you. This is better. Herschel's farm, season 1.
Sure. Then we have a contest.
Yeah, that's a conversation, but there's a couple shitty episodes there, and it was a short season. But, like, I think season 9 is legit good all the way till the end of the Whisperers arc, like halfway through season 10. That's like a new golden age of The Walking Dead, and it reinvigorated us. Thank God.
And here's where I start to feel like a crazy person, because everybody's telling me conflicting things. Lastly, just wanted to comment on the contents of the podcast. Aaron, you and I are aligned in spirit. After dedicating 12 years and 177 episodes, we have made peace with the fact that The Walking Dead will forever be known as a garbage franchise that once upon a time had the potential to be a top 10 show. We're here for the fun, ridiculous, stupid shit, and don't really expect anything great, just silly entertainment. Jim, in the preview podcast, you mentioned your intention for watching was to continue ripping the show. While I 100% believe that that's what this show deserves, it doesn't sound like you're having fun yet. We're talking about a show that made its money with things like Stealth Walkers, never being consistent on how much fire kills a walker, people wearing rotted flesh as a convincing disguise, shit writing, shit directing, shit acting. Are you really shocked and dismayed by a helicopter being downed by Nat's handheld Hawacha? It's almost like you're disappointed that the show isn't being amazing, logical, or believable, which is something The Walking Dead universe has proven it can never be. Now, this is the hell of being a podcaster, right? And you have different people listening and hearing the same thing and feeling different ways about it, because on one hand, I'm being told we're taking the show too seriously. Mm. On the other hand, I'm being told we're not taking the show seriously enough, or we are just covering this as silly, and so why take it seriously? Look, I can only cover this the way I cover it, and I always want shows to be better because I have to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
And I want a show to be good. I can't turn my brain off when I watch a stupid show and just a show with this pedigree, you know? Mm. It's like, sure, I can do that when I watch Return of the Living Dead or when I watch some other stupid zombie movie or whatever. I can just say, oh, it's all stupid. It's meant to be stupid. The show was never meant to be stupid. Mm-hmm. And the things that they're doing are telling me they still don't want this show to be stupid. Otherwise, you don't have the story arcs that they're going through with Rick and Michonne here. That part of the show is trying desperately not to be stupid. So how do I judge? How do I just take a show that wants to be known as high as in high regard by the television watching public and just say, oh, I'm watching it for stupidity's sake? I can't. Like, how do I make a joke out of, you know, Rick and Michonne's reunion? They're going big.
I've always thought that was one of our secret spices, is that when this show on rare occasion rises to the occasion, we can too. And we'll take it seriously and we'll say, like, oh my God, this is like a really well-conceived scene. This was a really amazingly written monologue. There's a really a lot of chemistry between these actors. I thought that zombie was really fucking cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I like what they're doing with the world building, whatever. And then when it's stupid, we can just go and make, you know, Guy Ferrari jokes and talk about, you know, Eugene Bill. Although that was a serious theory. I guess that's my dead man's brew. I actually thought I had something there.
The nuke. The satellite nuke.
But it's tough. I mean, we'll, like, as long as people, this is also really against all odds a successful podcast too. Like, the numbers aren't declining. It's kind of insane. So
that's the thing. We're doing something audience, right. Our audience is an audience of people who like to take television seriously and also like to have fun with the podcast when it's impossible to take something seriously. So I'm trying to do both of those things. And I like want to write the show off every single week, but also they want to do more with it. And if I'm watching it, why not at least give them that opportunity? But
maybe I'm a fool, but every single time I think, what if they get it together? And I was a little less hopeful for this because Scott Gimple is kind of a known quantity with me at this point. He's so
But it's Rick and Michonne, right?
However smug and self-satisfied you think he is on these promos, let me tell you,
Jesus
by
Christ.
All accounts, this guy is like off the fucking charts. I was excited. Like, I really wanted to see what a decent director and a decent budget would do with Rick and Michonne movies. I was going to see these in his theater. So I was kind of hoping that, like, yeah, like, why would you bring them back unless you had, like, something to Andy and Denai and they've been spitballing back and forth and talking about. Like, so I kind of was hoping that it would be. And I thought that first episode was really good. And the second episode, not as good, but still pretty good. This episode is just meh. So I hope that maybe we got one more meh, and then we got the two that AMC's kept in reserve to really blow our brains out with. But
yeah,
I don't know. We'll keep on. It's all a good data. I like seeing what people are saying about the show. It lets us kind of course correct and see how people are feeling about it. But we'll just keep on keeping on, seeing how things go.
Okay.
Lando's up next. Jada's last name being Stokes must be a reference to Father Gabriel Stokes. After all, before Gabe bagged Rosita, he was laying pipe in the Trash Kingdom. Oh my God. Seriously? She took his last name?
Apparently, yeah. I did some wiki reading because I take this show way too seriously.
Dude, I read the whole Gospel of Jadis, and I saw that she took in Stokes, but I didn't know the significance of it. Oh my God.
Yeah, they were lovers, man. They were lovers.
Undercovers. What would Father Gabriel say now?
I don't know.
You know what, Jadis? You're a real bee.
Yeah. God, you bang one time. I psychotic ex taking my name, forging like new identities with that shit. Finally, Michael writes in, says, I just watched episode 3, and this is goddamn ridiculous. I see two options for episode 4. One, the yada yada falling out of the motherfucking helicopter and then carry on like nothing stupid happened.
Okay. Well, we had that covered. Yeah.
that's certainly what's going to happen. Or number two, the remaining episodes are a fever dream, near-death hallucination, just before they hit the ground at the end of episode six. And Gimple would love that. He could jump all the timelines he wants.
Said you see him in the after-episode feature. Apparently he's one-upping Nick Otero's beret and scarf with his new bolo tie.
Dude,
Jesus Christ,
this
I'm
isn't
telling
new.
You.
This isn't new. This is this man.
Yeah.
He looks
and
like
not, hey, look,
Howdy
there's
Doody.
There's nothing wrong.
A fucking ventriloquist puppet with somebody's hand up his ass is what he looks like.
There's nothing inherently wrong with bow ties, with bolo ties, with
no,
any kind
is.
Of exotic neckwear. But, you know, there's also in this world Tucker Carlson and Scott Gimple. And they, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to ruin it for the rest of you because, like, there's people that still pull it off. But, yeah, that's like.
No, they don't. They think they do. You might even think they do. They don't. Nobody pulls off a bow tie or especially a bolo tie.
A bow tie? You can't pull off a bow tie with like a.
Chris Kimball's been trying to do it for decades. It hasn't worked.
Well, I'm talking like for formal occasions. Or if you happen to be a tweed jacket wearing professor. You know.
If you're winning a fucking Oscar and you know ahead of time, if you've seen the cards and you know you're winning that Oscar, you can pull off a bow tie because you just won the most prestigious media award. Yeah, but.
The Baldy? Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I do think like that would be pretty funny if like the next three episodes happen and like there is no indication that they just like, oh, wow, I can't believe he survived. And then like smash cut at the very last scene when Rick and Michonne have fought this improbable victory over the CRM. And then it smash cuts to like Danai's broken body on the Cascade Mountains with blood trickling from her mouth, the tear trickling from it. It's just like a fucking Saint Elsewhere. It was all the dream of a mortally wounded Michonne. Like, yeah, the thing is this is The Walking Dead. You can't like so Bill Simmons. I mean, I haven't listened to this podcast for a long time, but Bill Simmons coined the phrase the Tyson Zone. The Tyson Zone refers to when a celebrity gets to a point of crazy behavior to where anything that you come across a story, your first reaction is usually like if you heard like Michael Fassbender, you know, took off his pants and shit in George Lucas's car through the sunroof and then, you know, I don't know, slapped a baby. You'd be like, that doesn't sound like Michael Fassbender. But if you heard like Mike Tyson did that or like Britney, you know, there's a couple.
Well, we need to update this, right? We need it's now the Musk place. That guy got to a Musk place.
Yeah, you go to the Musk zone. You go into the Musk zone or any like it's like, oh, he sleeps in a hyperbaric chamber. Does he purify his firstborn son's blood to be injected into him? Does he is he trying to is he trying to impregnate every woman with a higher than 120 IQ and tall? It's like. Three of those things are at least confirmed true. I'll let you do the Google research to find out. But it's like, yeah, there's. I think The Walking Dead is in the Tyson zone. Like, there's no spoiler for episode six of this season where I'd be like, well, that's just fucking ridiculous. There's no fucking way.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I don't know. Maybe I'm a fool, but that still seems like a bridge too far for me.
I mean, yeah.
It was all a death dream.
I would immediately cancel our plans to do Dead City and just like, okay, for real now, we're done with this show. But
right.
But yeah, because that would be hateful. That would be really hateful to do that. You know, to Rick and Michonne, the
ones who profile thing like this, the favorite character. Yeah, screw that.
I don't think the show has the balls to kill either one of them, though. And, you know, also, like, they kind of a little bit of a cover because this is the ones who live. Their whole thing is improbably they survive, you know? Other people die. They got this, you know, multi-universal immortality thing going for them. You know, like, oh, a bunch of other realities. We died, but we're the ones who live. We'll see.
Yeah.
I believe that's it for feedback, which means that's it for the show. TWD@baldmove.com. If you'd like to send us more corrections about the number of children that Rick may or may not have, the true dark meaning behind Jadis's haircut. I think we propounded a couple questions, y'all. TWD@baldmove.com, or just tell us what you're thinking. Finally, if you'd like to support us and get more bonus content, behind the scenes stuff, our fabulous weekly show, Lunch with Jim and Aaron, or just ad free feeds. Who the hell wants to listen to ads? Pay a little bit of money, get rid of them. Sounds like a good deal to me. Support.baldmove.com. Bonus, it keeps me and Jim making podcasts. Win, win, win. That's going to be it for this week. We'll see you next week for the the thrilling conclusion of the helicopter splat. Mm-hmm. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.